reporting, USA Radio Network News.
Denzel Washington for the Boys and Girls Clubs.
In my hand, I'm holding a 2-inch by 3-inch piece of paper that has changed the lives of millions of young people. It's kept them off drugs, out of gangs, and in school. Now, what could be that powerful and still fit in the palm of my hand? A membership card from the Boys and Girls Clubs. Every day, another 300 kids will join clubs all across the country. That's 300 kids who will be picking up a membership card instead of a gun or a needle or a knife. You know, too many people feel like they can't make a difference, but I'm telling you this. Put this card in the hands of a child, and you will change that child's life. Do that, and you can change the world. It's up to all of us. Support a program that works. The Boys and Girls Clubs, the positive place for kids.
For more information and to find out how you can support the Boys and Girls Clubs, call 1-800-854-CLUB. That's 1-800-854-CLUB.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the inside scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the inside scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the inside scoop. Today's show is dedicated to the memory and legacy of Rosa Parks, who died this week. I think race is perhaps the most important and enduring question of American history, though race is but a social construct with skin color and hair texture of no more intrinsic biological importance than height or eye color, probably less. Nevertheless, this arbitrary classification that some Americans have considered for other Americans has always carried real and severe consequences throughout American history. Some issues come and go, but race as a problem endures. Issues of race, issues of what to do with African-American slaves, almost torpedoed the ratification of our Constitution. We fought the deadliest and most bloody war on American soil on questions of race. And for the next 100 years, of course, blacks were treated as second-class citizens under Jim Crow laws and really a terrorist campaign of violence and lynching by white Americans against them. Even the removal of these legal restrictions in the Civil Rights era did not come without political consequences. When Democrat Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, he said he was constraining the Democrats to be a minority party for a generation. And when Republican Richard Nixon took the racist Democrat George Wallace's racist ideology as his own, well, he's helped create the Republican majority we have today. Indeed, many would call Nixon's joining with Wallace's white racists as the beginning of the modern conservative movement. And so today, the political consequences continue. A mere 2% of blacks in America approve of George Bush, at a time when more than 40%, probably more than half, of white Americans approve of him. When Hurricane Katrina hit most hard on African Americans, the media, it seemed at first, really didn't even want to focus on it, even though we saw through our TV screens that the victims that were worst off were almost entirely black or brown. Just a week ago, we had the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March right here in Washington, D.C., with demagogues like Louis Farrakhan leading the way. And it seems the old debate between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X almost ceases to rage, the idea of whether you work within the system or against the system to get racial equality. Rosa Parks found that fine line. She fought against a racist system, but she did so with dignity, with honor, in a way that captured the American people. And with her death, I wonder, are there any more Rosa Parks that we have today? I'm going to ask that question to our guest today. His name is Kevin Gray. He's a contributing editor for Black News in Columbia, South Carolina, and the author of the book, The Death of Black Politics, which you can get on Amazon.com. Kevin Gray, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
man, I don't even know why you asked me to be on after that opening monologue that you just did.
Well,
I pretty much agree with almost 100%.
Well, that's good. I don't always agree with my guests, and I didn't know whether you would agree with me, but I'm glad to hear you agree with my opening monologue. Let's skip then past the history and go right to today. Are there any, well, I'm going to go back to history a little bit. Are there any Rosa Parks today? Are there any people that are fighting racism with the kind of dignity she did? Because when I see black politics today, I see people like Reverend Al Sharpton, a guy not elected to anything at any time, a guy who's got his own terrible past with Tarana Brawley. We've got Louis Farrakhan, and they seem to get the media attention. And Barack Obama, who I think I'm ready to nominate for President of the United States, after his great speech at the Democratic Convention, you almost don't hear anything about him in the press. What's going on here?
I may be a little bit more radical than you, my brother. Now, in all fairness, let me tell folks that I managed Al Sharpton's campaign here in South Carolina for a minute.
All right. Well, we can argue about
Frank
that.
Frank Watkins was the national campaign manager, and we both resigned for reasons if anyone would want to, were interested, they could go back and check the Internet.
Well, let's talk about Sharpton then.
Let's talk about Rosa.
Rosa is
the example, but I want to be clear what she's an example of and answer your question.
Okay.
There are many Rosa Parkses out there. The legacy and the importance of Rosa Parks, which a lot of people have gotten, is that she proved that one person could make a difference and create the impetus for structural change in American society. And she was a working person who attacked a problem that she and millions of other people faced every day. She was an ordinary person dealing with something that she had to deal with every day. She didn't have to wait on a leader to define what it was that she had to do. She didn't wait for a leader to define the fact that she had a problem. She knew she had a problem. She had to go to the back of the bus every day. She didn't need an Al Sharpton or a Jesse Jackson or a Louis Farrakhan to help her make the decision that this is what she wanted to do. Now, she was trained, and after she did what she did, organizations came behind her to create the boycott that created the change, structural change. So when you look at Rosa, anybody that looks at something that is blatantly wrong and discriminatory, and they want to stand up and make that change, you got to be ready for the consequences.
Kevin Gray, I have to interrupt you just because we're going to a hard break. I promise I will get back to you. Where are the Rosa Parks of today? If you want to call in, it's 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back after this.
Truckers keep America on the move, and lots of times it's chiropractors who keep truckers going. Here's a benefits card for truckers with discounts of 30 to 50% from a network of thousands of doctors of chiropractic in cities and towns all across America. This same card provides savings up to 60% from dentists at home and on the road. For $11.95 a month for individuals and $19.95 for your whole family, besides savings on chiropractors and dentists, there are similar savings on prescriptions and optical services at home and on the road. Got to get braces for the kids? Why not save 50%. This isn't insurance. These are instant savings with no paperwork to fill out. Truckers are important to us and the whole point of truckersbenefits.com. Get online now. Go to www.truckersbenefits.com for the whole story. If you're on the road, phone home and tell them to check out truckersbenefits.com from just $11.95 per month.
Dear Mama, my first 5 years, I'll learn a lot.
How to walk, talk, brush my teeth.
But for food, I'm pretty much counting on you.
I don't know what's good for me.
I can't use the stove, drive to the store. It's up to you.
So if you need help, there's WIC.
WIC, Women, Infants, Children.
They'll tell you what's good for me, even provide food. Because what I eat my first 5 years will affect me the rest of my life.
Love always,
your child.
Get proper nutrition before it's too late. Call or visit WIC. WIC provides nutrition information, healthcare referrals, even food for women, infants, children. To find out more about WIC, our nearest location, or if you qualify for our benefits, call 1-866-WIC-INFO.
P.S. It doesn't cost anything.
Your child has you, and you have WIC. Brought to you by the National WIC Association and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about what our guest, Kevin Gray, would call the death of black politics. He's the author of that book, The Death of Black Politics, which you can get at Amazon.com. And I've dedicated this show to Rosa Parks. And before the break, we were talking about where the Rosa Parks are of today. Kevin Gray was pointing out that she was an ordinary woman who just didn't want to keep suffering that indignity of going to the back of the bus. But certainly the problems of blacks today, while not political as much as, although there's some political problems, it's more social and economic. Clearly they're as severe now, I think, in some sense, as they were in her day. Where are the Rosa Parks of today, Kevin Gray?
Well, we have to go back to building a grassroots campaign and a grassroots movement and identify those people. Before we go further, because I believe that you may be mistaken, Norman Kelly's book, and Norman is a friend of mine or acquaintance, The Death of Black Politics, Head Negro in Charge. And my book comes out as a theoretical book in the fall. So,
oh, you don't have the title yet?
Well, you know, Norman and I discussed the titles, and Norman's book came out first.
Okay, so you have to pick a new one.
And it's a good book, and I suggest that people take a look at it.
Fair enough. So back to the question.
But anyway, let's get back to the whole idea of are there Rosa Parks out there? What we have to look at building are movements that are based on a bottom-up type of strategy as opposed to waiting for orders, marching orders from Jesse or Farrakhan or whatever, mm-hmm. From down on high. And even if we look at that Million More movement, and maybe there are some people that were in that audience that will go back to their locales and build something that is truly, I would say, multicultural and American, because the idea that anyone would leave an event and think that they could build or advocate a separatist or a more racially divided agenda for this country, well, that's just not moving the country forward. So what we need to be looking for are those people who have an understanding of what our movement, the civil rights movement, which is really a human rights movement, and you mentioned Malcolm, and luckily, I mean, toward the end of Malcolm's life, Malcolm was moving toward understanding our struggle, the African-American struggle in America, as being a human rights struggle. And when we get to that, then we can talk about the structural change that needs to take place, trying to have a country that's more desegregated, that where opportunity is broadly spread out, where the things that create structural problems for the black community, such as the war on drugs and the war on crime, which disenfranchises a lot of kids, has them extensive exposure to the criminal justice system. Those are the things that we need to start looking at, and looking at where to find the Rosa Parks, as those folk that are struggling against those structures in our society that keep blacks under
Kevin,
conditions of despair and poverty.
I do want to get very much to questions of poverty. They are intrinsic to all of this. I also want to get to the war on drugs. But let me go back, if I can, a little bit to the original question, because it seems to me that in the great conflict between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and you're right, toward the end of his life, Malcolm X came closer to Martin Luther King in terms of civil disobedience and nonviolent resistance and so forth. But in the great heyday, in the most radical days of Malcolm X, there was this separatist side, this, you know, screw 'em, we can just fight and even use violence. And it strikes me that here you have this Million Man March, and it's not led by people like Barack Obama, and it's not just him. I mean, there are people like John Conyers, who've been in Congress for 20-odd years, Bobby Scott, Mel Watt, Charlie Rangel, respected African-American elected leaders. And I don't see them leading a movement. I see and a demagogue, and correct me if you think I'm wrong about calling Farrakhan a demagogue, but I see someone who's anti-gay, who's anti-Semitic, who leads black people, I think, to hate white people instead of trying to work with all of us as Americans. Why is that happening?
You sure put a whole lot into a paragraph.
I do my best.
No, you know, listen, from the perspective that, let's deal with Barack Obama. Barack Obama, to a lot of African Americans, is an unknown, and they don't know how connected to the so-called black social movement from the civil rights movement of from the 50s to the 60s to the abolitionist movement.
All right.
I mean, they don't know.
Fair enough. How about John Conyers?
Well, John Conyers is getting old, and that is the problem. A lot of the folk who understand the political context of black struggle and integrationism are getting older, and there have been no mechanisms to teach people that particular type of political philosophy. Now, the other part of it is that America is a segregated society by no creation of black people.
Certainly.
So if you talk about the apprehension and the suspicion that both groups have toward each other, well, they don't really live amongst each other, and we deal with each other through the prism of race and history. And so, you know, and even as it relates to Farrakhan doesn't have wide followership among the black community at large.
No, I know he doesn't, but still, he can do a grassroots Million Man March, and I don't see more, sorry to use this word, but mainstream black politicians leading marches on Washington. And I guess that's my question. Where's the NAACP march? Where's, you know, the Urban League? Why aren't they leading march? Why isn't Jesse Jackson leading a march?
Well, part of it is that structurally, a lot of the groups that you mentioned, they're suffering either a reduction in membership, people aren't satisfied with what it is that the organization is supposed to be accomplishing, whether or not these organizations are working for structural change, or even the maintenance of what has happened in the past. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with a lot of black social movement organizations. So, and of course, you're talking about an inside-outside strategy, so you kind of put Congress and congressional people in a different kind of category because they're institutional players. Now, if you're talking about people that the so-called gadflies or the activists or the people, the catalysts for social change, there are no organizations with a broad message and broad followership in the black community at this point in time. The NAACP is there. It has the largest membership. But they're even suffering from its membership getting old and not teaching and bringing younger people into the organization.
Okay, so we've defined a lot of the problems. When we come back from break, I want to try to move to some of the solutions and then go, I guess, back to the problems, because obviously when you talk about race, you have to talk about class and poverty. You have to talk about the number of black men in jail and all the other things that Kevin Gray has written about. If you want to call in, folks, this is a vital question. You want to join in the debate or ask a good question, just call in 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255, or you can comment on the weblog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
The legacy of the great communicator lives on in his accomplishments and his spoken word. And now you can own a treasury of the great speeches of Ronald Wilson Reagan on DVD. We're offering 12 memorable speeches from Ronald Reagan's remarkable presidency, starting with his nomination speech all the way to his farewell to the nation in 1988. Included is his memorable speech at the Berlin Wall.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This DVD collection in full color is the best way to remember Ronald Reagan and share his wit, charm, and the clarity of his challenge to all Americans. Order the stirring collection of Reagan speeches for just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. Go to www.reagancollection.com.
Order online or by mail at the address ReaganCollection.com.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series. 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about what some have called the death of black politics with my guest. He's Kevin Gray, a contributing editor for Black News in Columbia, South Carolina. And we've talked about a lot of the problems. Barack Obama, I guess, is too young and too new. He's getting his feet wet. John Conyers, perhaps, is too old. Where are the leaders of black America today, Kevin Gray?
Well, they're out in the communities working. The movement... I believe that there will be a new movement built in this country. And part of what's going on with the economy, with the war, with the way people feel about the president, with the natural disasters, with the malaise that people feel right now in this country, if people are thinking about what will the future hold and what should it be. And I'm thinking that people want to come together more than they want to split apart. So whatever structural change that we talk about creating in the future, it's got to be about creating a more integrated society. And when we talk about poverty, we just can't have people stand up and say poverty is bad. And we've got to talk about ways of helping the poor not be poor. So even if you look at New Orleans, and a lot of people are talking about, well, let's rebuild the ninth ward, which was the area that's 25 feet below ground, below sea level. Well, maybe that ain't the best thing to be advocating. Maybe we ought to be talking about urban or rural homesteading like we've had in this country in the past to give people a stake in the community.
Kevin, that makes sense to me. But
so that's a structural change. And how the change is going to have to occur is on the local level. It's not going to necessarily be a leader who all of a sudden gets a good idea or several good ideas and policies and stands up and says, this is what we ought to do.
But, Kevin, here's the problem as I see it. I actually taught an inner-city school some 15 years ago, and at that time it was amazing to me, you know, a white kid from Nashville, Tennessee, actually going up north to teach an inner-city school just for a semester, but was the profound sense of hopelessness among the kids at that school. They really felt that this country didn't give a damn about them, didn't care what they did. And so, you know, one kid told me he's not going to live to see 25 anyway. He might as well, you know, sell some drugs and buy his girlfriend some earrings. It was kind of hard to dispute that. And it seems to me that the profound sense that I see, particularly among poor blacks, is just one of hopelessness, that this country doesn't care about them. And so then comes conspiracy theories. You know, Bush actually tried to blow up the levees. I had a guy call into my show that argued that actually Bush planted, you know, explosives in the levees. And I see that anger directed toward people like Farrakhan rather than these constructive solutions. How do you give people the hope that their country will care about them if things are done in less destructive ways?
Well, listen, if you're talking about organizations that represent people, and as I said, I don't necessarily believe that the Nation of Islam and Louis Farrakhan represents the majority of...
I don't think it does.
All right. And so when you talk about...
But I think
how
hopelessness.
How do you create hope in this country, then it means creating structures which people feel vested in their lives.
They feel
like they have some future, which means that if it's about talking about educational reform, if we know... And in South Carolina, I use the example of South Carolina, which is where I'm at, that only 39% of all black males are graduating from high school. That's only 4 out of 10. Then you know you have to talk about education. If, you know, people talk about poverty, but they never talk about how to help people not be poor. And instead of a reliance on the welfare state of putting people in public housing, why not give people a house as an investment, and they can use that to invest in their children's education or invest in a business, but it makes people feel vested in society. So that you've got to talk about structural change of the educational system. What, beyond this petty debate about school choice and vouchers, what beyond that petty debate will change the circumstance and the structure of education so people feel as though they're getting something out of it?
Kevin,
that's one thing.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk about education specifically, because it seems to me that, you know, you got liberals and conservatives talking past each other. You got liberals who aren't recognizing that in some places in the black community, poor blacks particularly, education is seen as a bad thing. It's seen as acting white. And conservatives emphasize that, but then they don't point out how it is that we have unequal, separate and unequal education in America, where you've got poor black schools not getting near the funding that rich white schools get. So I want to try to get past that liberal-conservative divide, if I can, right after these messages.
This is Newsbreak. President Bush was in South Florida today, taking a look at the damage done by Hurricane Wilma and the ongoing recovery efforts. White House counsel Harriet Myers has asked the president to withdraw her Supreme Court nomination. He has done so, says he will name a replacement in due time. The U.S. Supreme Court has been asked to hear the case of an Al-Qaeda suspect who's an American citizen and says he should not be detained indefinitely without trial on U.S. soil. Tropical storm Beta is likely to reach Nicaragua's mainland tomorrow. Reportedly, it could develop into a hurricane. On Wall Street, the Dow fell 115 points to 10,230. The NASDAQ was down 36 points to 2064, while the S&P 500 was off by 12 at 1179. Commerce Department says new home sales didn't rise as much as expected last month, and median prices dropped. There's more news at USARadio.com.
With eHarmony, they asked me about me. Then they came back with, here's all the people we think are great for you.
The profile picked out that we're both pretty adventuresome people.
At eHarmony, our mission is to find you that one person in the world with whom you were meant to be.
It was like, wow. You know, a girl with her own motorcycle. What more could a guy ask for? Her parents have their own bikes, both of them. So they have their own little biker gang.
Sharing life's adventures with your soulmate opens up endless possibilities in your relationship.
We went to Sedona with my parents.
Her mom let me ride her Harley.
She hasn't even let me ride her motorcycle.
That's the weekend where I asked her dad for his permission.
He fits right into the Everett biker gang.
I found somebody who I could have my adventures with in my fun lifestyle. It's the best feeling in the world.
Start the adventure today. Visit eHarmony.com and get your personality profile, a $40 value free.
This will be an everlasting love.
I'm Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
High blood pressure has been called the silent killer. It's a risk factor for kidney disease, stroke, and heart conditions. But will your blood pressure creep up over the years? New research from Framingham, Massachusetts suggests that the answer for most middle-aged people is yes. A study in the Journal of the American Medical Association shows that Americans in their mid-50s face a 90% risk of developing high blood pressure during the remaining years of their lives.
A different study in the Archives of Internal Medicine suggests that doctors are not as aggressive in treating high blood pressure as they might be. Patients who had documented hypertension for at least 6 months were undertreated, even though their doctors were familiar with clinical guidelines. Losing weight, exercising, learning to relax, eating plenty of vegetables and fruits, and cutting sodium can all help control blood pressure.
This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today's show is dedicated to Rosa Parks, and we're discussing black politics with my guest, Kevin Gray, the contributing editor for Black News in Columbia, South Carolina. Kevin, before the break, you brought up the question of education. I certainly agree with you. Education is the strongest and best way out of poverty in America. But we've got, I don't know, we've got whites that are leaving schools that are integrated and going into suburbs so they're not in those schools. And you got some blacks in the inner city arguing that education isn't what they want. It's kind of a dual problem. What do you think is the solution?
Well, now, you have a lot of people proposing some things I don't necessarily agree with. As I said, I would like to have a discussion on a different kind of school system. What is educational reform for this century? And what do the schools have to look like to make the students competitive in the marketplace? And so that's the fundamental question. What is real educational reform?
What is it?
But now let me, the predecessor to that is, because you talked about school funding.
Yeah.
The predecessor to that is as a country deciding how to desegregate.
Right. We're still separate and unequal, aren't we?
And this idea of people, especially people with money and middle class people, being afraid to be around poor people.
Right.
So,
and some of it's in the black community too, isn't it? Blacks also leaving the poorer African American communities and themselves moving to the better schools in the suburbs.
Well, it's a mixed bag. I mean, I live in a basically a middle class neighborhood in the middle of the inner city, but I'm in the South, and traditionally there was a lot of inner class mixing.
Bougie blacks, they call them.
And blacks, yeah. Well, there's the economic class distinctions in a lot of black communities aren't. There's not a lot of segregation amongst the economic classes. There are people who choose to move to the suburbs, and there are people who choose to move who have the economic wherewithal to move into integrated communities, and their kids go to predominantly white schools.
Right.
So, you know, some parts of it,
sure,
it is a matter of economics, but it gets back to, hey, what do we do with the poor? Do we have a housing plan that continues to segregate people, and how can we really desegregate the country? So if we start from the position that, A, desegregation is a good thing, and that's not only desegregation by race, but desegregation by economic class, then that at least gets to the heart of these school districts that don't have a funding base because they don't have an adequate tax base.
Yeah, but Kevin, you know, in the 1970s, a lot of white parents said, you know, I may believe that integration's a good thing for this country, but, you know, my kids deserve a good education, and they're not getting a good education, and I don't want to play social experiments with my kids. And largely, that attitude has prevailed. How do we get the country to recognize parents to recognize the good of integration right now in 2005?
Well, listen, people make choices as to how they want to educate their kids at the elementary and high school level, and of course when they go off to college, people make choices as to what kind of higher education they want their child to have. So, you know, it's going to always be difficult to argue against a parent's choice as to how they educate their child. But if we're talking about a public school system, then ultimately it suits the general, it's good for the general welfare if we have an educated citizen.
No question. So do we bring back busing, or is there some other answer?
No, as I said, with housing desegregation.
Starts with poverty, really. If we fix poverty,
then for me, the radical thing is, my reparations plan calls for giving poor people a place to stay and a vested interest in their lives and in their communities. It's not a billion-dollar fantasy of making white folk pay for slavery.
You know what, Kevin? That's my reparations plan as well. A housing homestead and education through college. I don't know that we're in the majority here, but I certainly agree with you. Let me go to the phones. We got a caller on the line. By the way, folks, if you want to call in, it's 877-528-TALK. Let's go to Gordon from Michigan. Gordon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, Mark, I'm a white man who was born and raised in Detroit. And I met Rosa Parks once. She came to our church.
Really?
And when she was 81, she had a break-in from a black man.
Oh, yeah.
Break-in from
I
a
remember
black
that.
Man who proceeded to beat her.
Yeah.
And she said to him, "Don't you know who I am?" And the black man said, "I don't care who you are." And he continued to beat her and rob her of $52.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, in downtown Detroit, we have a symbol. We have a black fist of Joe Louis, and it's on, it's a big monument down on Jefferson on the riverfront. And I would suggest to you that perhaps as a symbol of black integration in this society, two of those fingers of that fist should be extended into a peace sign. Do you think there'll be a time and a place for that?
Well, be more specific in what you're. I mean, you're talking about a symbol, but your larger question is what, Gordon?
Well, I'm going to be going down to a fundraiser tomorrow for John Conyers.
Good.
And hopefully I'll be able to give him the same question. I'm saying, isn't there a time and a place for the black reaction to try to discard this anger?
Well, you know,
seen most prevalent by the whites.
Or even...
Maybe it's a false... Maybe it's a misconception.
Look, I don't think anger can ever stop until racism stops. But Martin Luther King, I think, redirected the anger. I think Martin Luther King was clearly angry at racism and oppression. But he directed it into a campaign of grassroots and nonviolence. He directed that anger rather into doing destructive things. And that's, I guess, my main question for Kevin Gray. Yeah.
But the point that I'm trying to make is that what Dr. King directed people toward was structural change. Either it was desegregating the schools, public accommodations, the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act. There was something of substance that changed the structure, which is why he had the command of the people. So until we can figure out what are those structural things that we can get people to agree that this is what we want to do, that's when you see the change. Now, as it relates to symbolism, you know, Rosa Parks is a symbol for the whole country. Perhaps we ought to be asking the President of the United States to lower the flags, have staff for Rosa Parks, because she is the symbol of somebody who did something for all the right reasons and never asked for anything for it.
It's a good point. When we come back, I want to talk about more of the structural change to which you seek, Kevin Gray. I support you, but I don't know that we're going to get a Homestead Act or anything like that anytime soon, though it's starting with Katrina. But when we come back, I want to talk about the real problems. I mean, so many black men in jail, the war on drugs, the fact that so many black men can't vote because of the ex-felons laws in the South, and talk about which structural changes are achievable. You know, when you have a revolution, a lot of times you can't get from here to there in 1 year. I mean, even Thurgood Marshall took many, many years of hard legal work to get Brown versus Board of Education. What are the changes that are most achievable tomorrow? If you want to call in, it's 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. We'll be right back after this.
I'm sure you've heard the saying, when you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot in it and hang on. Margie Garrison was at the end of her rope. At the young age of 28, she was told she would be in a wheelchair in about 5 years. And then, when she just couldn't go on any longer, she met a doctor who said to her, "Margie, arthritis is the easiest disease there is to cure." Now, can you imagine Margie's joy after 43 years and thousands of dollars of doctor bills and pain medications that didn't work? Learn the whole story online at healthstarproducts.com. That's H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com. It's guaranteed or your money back, and you have a full year to decide. Look it up online for yourself at HealthStar, H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com, and find out if what worked for Margie Garrison will work for you. They're always talking about the number of people without health insurance, but what about those without dental coverage? If you're self-employed, retired, or your employer just doesn't provide dental insurance, there is an $11.95 a month solution that saves you up to 30, 50, and even 60% on dental services. And because this isn't insurance, there are no turndowns, no claim forms, no waiting periods, no runaround. And this nationwide program covers cleaning, restorations, and cosmetic dentistry. Get the whole story online. You don't have to talk to anyone if you don't want to. There's even a form to email to get a list of all the providers in your area. Go to www.1195dental.com. You type in the numbers 1195 followed by the word dental, dental.com. 1195dental.com is here to help. And check out our low prices for family memberships.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about black politics with Kevin Gray, contributing editor for Black News in Columbia, South Carolina. Kevin, one of the advantages of being a talk radio host is that I can ask really tough questions of my guests to which I have no idea what the answer is. And I admit
And most of your guests don't have any idea what the answer is either.
Well, it's a very, very tough question. I just want to say that to make clear that I don't expect you to have this wonderful solution, but notwithstanding that, I'm going to ask you the question. It seems to me that the structural changes you want We're going in the wrong direction. We got a Republican Congress that for the first time is cutting Medicaid for the poor. They're cutting student loans. They're making it harder for people to achieve the American dream. What structural things can we as Americans hope to achieve in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years? Sure, we'd all like to see equality, the end of racism in 50. But how do we get from here to there?
Brother, you making me feel like I got to get either a little red book or a little green book. I'm going to attempt to
just give me your
question.
Best advice.
Well, you know, listen, you're right. We are going in the wrong direction, but I do believe that this so-called Republican Revolution is coming to an end. We've been in the age of Reagan for a while now, and I think that this current president has soured people's stomachs toward this kind of politics. So hopefully in the next 5 years or so, there'll be a change. Now, I don't know if I expect that change to come from the Democrats.
No, you attack them too, don't you? You don't think they're offering an alternative.
Well, you know, it's just like with the Myers nomination. They should have went ahead and supported Myers because it's not like they had, they had a better hand than the Republicans or they, you know, they don't have.
You know what, I disagree with you on that, but I don't want to get sidetracked. Tell
me
this.
But listen, I think that, first of all, the communities that are most affected by policies that disenfranchise or dispossess them, those are the communities that have to organize on the local level. So if you talk about structural stuff, we are talking about the war on drugs and drug decriminalization, legalization, and medical marijuana and all that, those issues now. And 5 years ago, that discussion wasn't being held. I mean, people are aware that the war on drugs is a losing proposition. So at least we've gotten to the point now that people will talk about a different way of dealing with the problem, maybe even turning the drug issue into a health issue as opposed to a criminal justice issue. And in the black community, if you do that, then that strikes at the heart of the folk who are being disenfranchised due to felony arrest. They're being arrested because of drug convictions.
Let me ask you
nonviolent
this.
Nonviolent drug convictions at that.
Kevin, let me ask you this. And I have complete sympathy with you on the war on drugs. But I think it back to Gordon's question about the guy that beat up Rosa Parks. And there are thugs everywhere. They're murderers and thugs of every race, no question about it. But what is there a cultural problem among poor people, or is it just hopelessness?
Listen, I can make the argument that George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Pearl, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and all those people that took this country to an illegal war where thousands of people died.
Right, they killed a lot more than that.
Criminal.
Yeah, no, that's true. They killed a lot more than the thug that beat up Rosa Parks. But let me talk about that, because in the military today, an increasing number, as you well point out, of the people fighting in Iraq are black or brown and poor because they really have no other choice in society. How do we deal with that element?
Well, as I said, we got to create the situation where people have a better option besides having to choose between jail and poverty or going to fight a war that they might not necessarily believe in. So, as I said, it's a structural change that needs to occur in American society. We have to talk about what Dr. King called the third paradigm. What is that economic system between capitalism and socialism that will work for everybody and not just exploit the poor and not just exploit race and class division?
Kevin, help me out with this. And this is a question for Eleanor Holmes Norton, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Every time I bring up the question of not funding schools enough, particularly not funding inner-city schools, and I have examples from California and Texas and Chicago and Michigan, they always throw back at me D.C., which is my hometown, that in Washington, D.C., there is a lot of funding for schools and there's still problems with education. I don't know if you have an answer to that, but I've had trouble with that one.
Hey, listen, man, I am 48 years old. My sister and I desegregated the schools in our district in 1969. I've gone to segregated schools. I've gone to integrated schools. Sometimes it's not necessarily the amount of money or the kind of facility or the kind of equipment that you have in a school. It's whether or not people feel connected to that school. They feel connected to the teachers. It's whether or not the kids believe what the teachers are saying and the teachers believe what they're teaching.
How do we get there? Is it the black church? What do we do to instill? I mean, so we have some immigrants that come and have a greater feeling for education than some native people in the inner city.
It's a broader question as to how do we create a multicultural society that really respects and recognizes people's contributions. Now, you know, it's even as simple as the history that people teach in the high schools about the founding of this country and how it was built, and teaching people the true history of this country instead of Columbus came over.
Sure.
Found the country,
sure.
And everything was good.
Right. Now, we need to talk about Native Americans. Absolutely. People need to understand the role that people have played throughout history and not just those ruling the roost. Absolutely. Let me go back to Gordon from Michigan because I know he has another question. Gordon, go ahead.
Yeah, you talk about structural changes, but I believe structural changes are about attitude. You know, I was at the riots of 67 in Detroit, and I was in a race riot in Fort Polk, Louisiana, in AIT, where black GIs and white GIs are trying to kill each other with entrenching tools. But when I got into combat in Vietnam, I had a black man save my life and gave his life for me, and that gave me a new attitude, a new attitude saying that black man was as much an American as I was. He was as much my brother in that instant.
But you make a good point. It was the integration of the military. It was the fact that you worked together, that you saved each other's lives, that changes attitudes. That in essence, we're still fighting the battle of 1954. We're still battling segregation in America, and that as we live together and work together, people realize that people aren't so different from other people.
Isn't that what Nelson Mandela said? You work with your enemy, and he no longer becomes your enemy.
So is that solution, Kevin? Is it integration?
I don't think that the mass of black people believe that white people are their enemy. They believe that the system
no,
is weighted against them.
Right, and it is.
And as I said, we need to define once and for all, or need to decide that we're going to live together in an integrated community and build structures that reflect that.
Let me ask you this. We have to go to a break, but when we come back, I want you to talk about what you write as the dark side of Bill Clinton's legacy. Bill Clinton has been a real hero to the black community. Toni Morrison called him the first black president. But you write that there's a dark side, and I want to hear what that is. And also hear, again, if the Democrats are not the alternative, why not? And who is the alternative? I mean, it seems to me like, and I'm not saying the Democratic Party is perfect by any means, but that's all you got right now, isn't it? We'll be back with that. And your questions, 877-528-TALK, right after this.
Is the burden of large credit card debt getting too heavy for you to carry alone? Call Debt Relief of America. They are expert debt negotiators that go to work for you to eliminate 50 to 60% of your credit card debt.
Within 3 months, I was debt-free and the collection hassle stopped.
I was buried in debt with no way of knowing how I was going to get out. DRA worked with my creditors and cut my debt in half.
My wife and I both feel Debt Relief of America is a godsend.
Call now for your free debt relief consultation. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. You will get a step-by-step plan on how Debt Relief of America can help you wipe out up to 60% of your credit card bills. Call 800-509-5495. 800-509-5495. One call could literally save you thousands of dollars. Not available in all states. 800-509-5495. 800-509-5495.
What is the most influential time in a child's life? Age 6? 8? 12? Actually, it's between 3 and 8. Every afternoon. That's the time a kid is most likely to get into trouble or worse. Which is exactly why that's the time the Boys and Girls Clubs open their doors and their arms to kids all over the country every day. When kids walk into these clubs, they're surrounded by people who care what happens to them. Adults who make sure these children continue to learn and grow long after the school bell rings. In fact, with so many educational programs, most of the Boys and Girls Club members go on to college. But there are still thousands more kids who need our help. I'm Denzel Washington, and I'm asking you to make sure every child has a safe place to go after school. Call 1-800-854-CLUB. Support the Boys and Girls Clubs, the positive place for kids.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We only have a few minutes left. No, I didn't think we were going to solve all the problems of race and poverty in America in an hour. But just talking about it is a start. Just getting folks thinking about it, black and white. We are in this together. Why is this racial divide, this construct that we call race that really has no intrinsic meaning, why does it continue to divide us? And what is a way out? My guest is Kevin Gray. He's contributing editor for Black News in Columbia, South Carolina. Kevin, you write that there's a dark side to Bill Clinton's legacy, and the Democrats are not offering an alternative vision. What do you mean by that?
Well, obviously, with the war and with the troubles with the economy, what are the Democrats offering? Absolutely nothing.
Well, they're offering...
just waiting for the Republicans to self-destruct.
Aren't they offering better education, better health care for the poor, getting us out of the war in Iraq?
Listen, Bill Clinton dismantled the little bit of the welfare state that existed,
let's talk about
Bill Clinton and black folk, well, 100,000 more black men went to jail under Bill Clinton's administration than went under Ronald Reagan's administration.
You mean because of the war on drugs?
The war on drugs, and Clinton expanded the war on drugs into Colombia, so
okay,
from that
Kevin,
perspective, he hasn't really helped us structurally.
I'm going to agree with you on the war on drugs, but I'm not sure I'm going to agree with you as far as workfare is concerned. I mean, don't you think that welfare... without any kind of component of responsibility has been harmful to the black community?
And listen, we have a welfare state, a quasi-welfare state. There's the military, there's the government is big, and that's socialism. So the government decides who it wants to extend privilege and benefits to. And the fact that there are poor people that we will not figure out a way to get them structurally vested in the system, and you and I both talked about reparations in terms of homesteading and education. Well, that's a solution as opposed to just trying to create the illusion that if you get rid of welfare, it will force poor people to go out there and overcome the odds.
Let me talk about something that I talk about when I talk about this issue of welfare and workfare. And I have Republicans that I argue with all the time about this. I say, you know what, if you're going to have workfare, if you're going to take a woman on welfare and make her work, you got to provide child care. You can't.
And you got to have a job that pays a living wage.
Yeah, but you also got to give her an education.
Two jobs to make a living wage.
True, but here's the thing. I argue that all the time to the conservatives, and they come back to me, I think, something that is also true, which is that there's this cultural belief in some sectors, particularly the poorest sectors of our country, that I don't need to achieve, I don't need to care.
You know, for a country that was built based on stolen slave labor, it's
That's
always
true.
Been the stereotype that the poor and that black folk are lazy. But you know, the African kidnappy built this country.
That's
and
true.
If you look at the structure of our economy, it's all based, it's, as Karl Marx said, it's based on cotton. So, you know, I think that if people have the opportunity, they can achieve. If people feel vested in a society, they'll achieve. If you talk about Bill Clinton, there was a lot of symbolism but very little substance, and for the things that would have structurally changed and made better the condition of African Americans, such as proportional representation, which Lonnie Guinier supported, as well as Attorney Myers, then those are the things that make a difference.
Well, Kevin, we're going to have to end it here. I do think that Bill Clinton did a lot of good for black people. You're absolutely right on the war on drugs, but I think simply lowering poverty, helping people get better educated was a big legacy. And I also think symbols matter. I talked about the fact that people felt hopeless in the inner city school where I taught. Bill Clinton, I think, gave Americans hope, gave African Americans hope, gave people of all stripes, poor people.